Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown. It's good to have you with us. And I'm super excited to share our next guest's story with you today. A couple of years ago, I race announced an Ironman, and I've always said since then, it is harder to work an Ironman than to race an Ironman. And our guest today has worked a few, and you'll find out exactly why he's worked a few in a moment. But he raced on the Big Island this year and had a pretty good performance, I can tell you, finishing second in his age group. And yeah, he's got a pretty cool story, and we dig into bicycles quite deeply today. So yeah, if you're into sort of gear and tech, I think you might geek out a little bit on this one. I thoroughly enjoyed my chat. We head to Des Moines, Iowa to catch up with Matt Kaminsky on today's episode of the Kona Edge. Before we get into that, though, don't forget we are giving away an entry into an Ironman race. I want to pay for you to race. Yep. As simple as that. All you need to do is leave us a review on iTunes and head over to this URL to enter the contest, okay? It is thekonaedge.com/win. All the details are there. You can also text the word Ironman to 44222 and I'll send you all the details back. Coming up next before we head to Des Moines is our Coach's Corner. This is the Coach's Corner, and it's time to chat some coaching. If you need some help to get faster, or if you want to get stronger, we've got access to a network of triathlon coaches around the globe that are more than willing to help you out. All you have to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. If you own a coaching business, or if you're a coach yourself and you'd like to get a bit of airtime here on the podcast, all you have to do is head over to that same URL, scroll down to the bottom, all the details are there. It's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge, and we head to Des Moines, Iowa to catch up with Matt Kamansky. Matt, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Matt, just a few days post-Kona 2017, how's the body holding up? How are you feeling?
Actually pretty well. This is only my second Ironman, so I wasn't quite sure what to expect. But I feel a lot better this time than I did after my first race in Chattanooga. So I think that's good. And I had a really good day in Kona. So I think you always feel better after the good days than the bad ones.
Feeling physically good, does that mean you didn't push hard enough on race day? What's the story?
I think it just means that I was well prepared, and my nutrition went pretty well. And I guess maybe I had a little bit left in the tank, but it certainly didn't feel like it when I was out there.
I'm sure it was a hot day out, no doubt. Matt, you've been on the Big Island a couple of times. You've worked around the expo, and we'll get into a little bit about what you do on this podcast as well. But from a racing expectation perspective, was it everything you hoped it would be?
Yeah, I'd say I had some expectations of what it would be like, but not a lot. And there's, in some ways, it was a little bit different than what I was expecting, but a lot of ways it was the same. It's a totally different experience to go to a world championship event like that. Whereas a lot of local races, you're off by yourself a lot of the day. Whereas in a race like Kona, there's always somebody around, always somebody to go after. So that made it nice. And the conditions, especially on the bike course, seemed, when I was out there, it seemed like a really hard day. But obviously with guys breaking the bike course record, maybe not so much. So, it was really interesting to get out there and kind of experience everything. And I definitely learned a lot.
I'm sure. Do you feel like you've got unfinished business on the Big Island?
I wouldn't say that necessarily. Going into the day, I thought if everything went perfectly to plan, that maybe a top 10 in the age group was attainable, and ended up finishing second. So it was pretty unbelievable. But I think I'll definitely be back one day to race again.
One day you're not committing to 2018 just yet?
Probably not 2018. But we'll see.
Never say never, I'm sure. A week or two from now, that might change. But let's take a step back and talk about you growing up and your sort of sporting activities as a kid. Were you fairly active as a youngster?
So I ran cross country and track in high school and swam a little bit. So that definitely helped as I started to get into triathlon. And, you know, I was always kind of outside doing things and always enjoyed racing. So I wasn't by any means a great runner or swimmer. So triathlon was kind of a natural transition for me, where I could kind of be pretty decent in all three sports and do pretty well still.
When did tri first come onto your radar? When did you first sort of venture into it?
So in high school, I did a couple of sprints and maybe an Olympic distance race. And then when I went off to college, kind of got a little more serious, raced with the triathlon club at Ohio State. We always went to collegiate nationals every year. And throughout my 5 years in college, each year got a little more serious and learned a little bit more about the sport.
You definitely weren't messing around at college either. You studied aeronautical engineering.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting. Probably, I'd say 75% at least of the kids on the triathlon team with me were also engineers. So I'm not sure what it is about engineers and triathlons, but they seem to kind of go well together.
Well, you said as a youngster you swam and you ran. You weren't really that good. It's not like you were racing nationally. When you sort of discovered triathlon, did you know then that this is something I could get good at, or were you good from the start?
I definitely wasn't good from the start. I did okay. You know, maybe won my age group sometimes. But I definitely enjoyed it, and I think I enjoyed the fact there's so much to improve upon. You know, in each sport, you can, if you improve by a little bit in each one, that can kind of make a big improvement on your overall result. So yeah, it was something that I knew I could eventually be pretty good at, but definitely wasn't winning races right off the bat.
What's, in your opinion, what's the secret to being good at this sport? What does it take to be a great triathlete, a great age group, I should say. I mean, not necessarily a pro, but as an age grouper.
I don't think there's any really big secret. I think the secret is just being consistent and working hard. And if you consistently work hard week over week and year over year, you're gonna keep getting faster. And I don't think there's any secret workouts to do or anything like that. It's just about you know, if every year you can make your key workout a little longer, a little harder, go a little faster, that's really, I think, what the sport's all about for most age groupers.
As an engineer, I take it you're pretty analytical. Are you the same when it comes to your training? Do you live and die by the numbers? Are you a big one to sort of really analyze what you're doing and try and get better that way?
I definitely like to look at the numbers, and I use Training Peaks and kind of keep track of all that. I try not to live and die by the numbers, because I think you can get pretty stuck doing that. And you can go down a rabbit hole pretty quick where you're just chasing a bigger CTL number or higher average power. And so it's important to listen to your body too, because all the numbers can't capture exactly what's going on. So I try to keep a pretty balanced approach to that.
Let's talk about work and life outside of triathlon. You've got, I think, for a lot of age groupers and a lot of triathletes, probably the dream job. You work for one of the bike companies. Tell us a little bit about what you do and who you do it for.
Yeah, so I'm the chief engineer at Diamond Bikes. So I do a lot of the design for our new products, and we have a factory right here in Iowa. I'm actually here now, so this is where all the bikes are made. So I kind of oversee all that and oversee all the manufacturing processes. So actually the bike I rode in Kona was our Marquee, and we launched that in Kona 2016. So the actual bike that I rode was the second or third prototype that we made, and I finished it the week before Chattanooga, which is where I qualified last year, and raced in Chattanooga to qualify for Kona, and then trained on it obviously and raced again in Kona. So that was pretty cool to be able to race on the bike that I built with my own two hands and did all the design on and everything.
That is pretty cool. How fast is that bike?
It's as fast as you pedal.
That is the right answer. Matt, as far as the bike goes, I mean, and this isn't just a dime a bike thing. Often age groupers get sort of sucked into the latest and greatest. I like the fact that you said it's as fast as you pedal, but having a good bike with a good setup does make a big difference, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, certainly. So I'm big into talking about the numbers, and I'm a big fan of Best Bike Split. They have a new tool where it'll try to analyze your power files and try to figure out your CDA. So after my races, I always put it in and see how I'm doing, and always trying to tinker with some new setups and make some improvements. But yeah, definitely there's, even at Kona, everybody, you know, there's a lot of nice bikes there, but, some of these guys, you're just trying to, maybe they don't know any better, but some of their equipment setups seem pretty questionable.
And as much as you can drop thousands and thousands on a bike, like you say, at the end of the day, it's about what's in the legs. You can ride the best bike in the world, but if you haven't done the work, you are going to get shown up on race day.
Yeah, exactly. You can spend as much money as you want, and unless you're hiding a motor in there or something, it doesn't really matter if you don't put the work in.
I'm interested to know sort of how much goes into designing, like you say, a 2017 Diamonds sort of top of the range bike. Sort of how long is that process from concept to having it on a bicycle store's showroom floor?
So with the Marquee that we launched in 2017, it wasn't a brand new. The whole thing wasn't new. It was probably half of the bike was new, and we still use some parts from the older model. But we kind of started talking about it in March of 2015. And then we had a prototype in Kona of 2016. So it was about a year and a half to complete the design. Design the molds, get the molds cut, and then do some initial layups. And then we started shipping the first production ones in January of this year. So altogether, from concept to production, it was close to a 2-year process.
Wow. How much pressure is there on you as the sort of chief engineer to keep pushing the boundaries but at the same time, not sort of break away too much from what the brand stands for and almost irritate people? We see it often in running shoes where something's working really well, and then two sort of designs later, it's something totally different. Somebody loved it 2 years ago, but they hate it now. Is that something you guys need to be cognizant of?
Yeah, for sure. We're obviously our design's a little bit unique. Having a beam bike, we really believe in that concept. We believe that it's a really aerodynamic design, and then there's some other benefits too as far as comfort. And so we have those key things, and then Another thing that we're really cognizant of is how it handles. We feel like it performs really well in crosswinds, and just handling like down descents and stuff. And we've had a lot of feedback from customers saying that same thing. So we have, you know, try to figure out exactly what is making the bike good at that and make sure we keep those things. But another thing I've learned is that no matter what you do, you're not going to make everybody happy. So you just do the best you can and try to accommodate as many people as possible and make the best product that you think you can make.
You obviously, where you are and where you're placed, see a lot of trends and sort of where things are going. What do you think, and we've seen it over time, I mean, a few years ago, it's quite a few years ago now, everyone was talking power, and then it was sort of electronic shifters. What do you think the next sort of 5-10 years looks like for bike design and bike manufacture?
So I think we're starting to see a lot of disc brake models come out. And I think that right now, like Quintana Roo just came out with the disc brake model. And from what I saw, basically they just put disc brakes on their existing bike, which is fine. I think there's a few benefits to disc brakes. There's also some disadvantages, but I think in the next 2 or 3 years, we're going to see some really cool designs with people really figuring out how to integrate the disc brake design into the frame. And also I think there's some pretty cool opportunities as far as wheel performance goes. If you don't have to have a brake track on the rim, you can do some cool things with the rim shape. So I think that disc brakes are definitely where things are moving. And I think that we're just kind of seeing the tip of the iceberg here, and there'll be some more exciting things to come in the next, maybe not next year or two, but in the next 3 to 5 years.
There's a lot of talk about aerodynamics and obviously you coming from an aeronautical engineering sort of background. What are some of the big mistakes UC Age Group is making from an aerodynamics point of view, whether they ride a diamond or not, just looking at the way they set things up? Are there one or two things or tips that you could give people that would sort of help with the aerodynamic point of view?
Yeah, so no matter what frame you're riding, the biggest drag is your body. So getting your fit set up right is one of the biggest things. And to kind of go along with that, getting a fit that's comfortable enough for you that you can maintain for the whole race is just as important. If you have most aerodynamic position out there, but half the time you're sitting up, it doesn't really matter. And then probably another really easy thing is where you're putting your bottles. So on most bikes, a down tube bottle causes a ton of drag. And on a course like Kona, they have aid stations probably every 7 miles. So for most people, at a maximum, you're going to go buy one every 30 minutes. So to me, there's no reason to have more than 2 bottles, maybe 3. So you just put one between your arms and one behind your seat, 2 back there if you really want. And then you should be good to go and not really take any drag penalties for that.
Yeah, from a numbers perspective, and you guys have obviously done the tests. I mean, how much time can you actually shave off by something like that? A down tube bottle, you mentioned how close the aid stations are together in Kona. I mean, could you put it down to a specific time or a percentage that you guys have picked up in the tests that you've done?
I don't, as far as I can remember, I don't know if we've done that test specifically. And I don't know off the top of my head. I don't have a specific number here for you.
Interesting indeed. As far as balancing sort of for you working in the industry, working for Diamond Bikes and still being a competitive age grouper. I think for a lot of people, triathlon is an escape from their 9 to 5. For you, it's pretty much your life. How do you switch off? What's your sort of off time?
So, you know, it kind of depends. Like during the summer, it's basically wake up, go swim, train or work all day, and then do another session, and then come home, make dinner, and go to bed, do it all again the next day. And I find like during those times, I really enjoy just being out on my bike all day. And so I don't know that I necessarily need a time off, but now that Kona's over and it's kind of the off season, I'm pretty excited to have some Saturdays. I'm a big college football fan, so I'm excited to spend the weekend just watching some football games and drinking some beers and, you know,
hanging out on the dark side.
Just kind of relaxing, yeah. And then in a couple weeks here, we'll start to get going again and figure out what's on the list for next year.
How long a break do you take after an A race like Kona, for example? Is it, I mean, do you take a bit of time off, or do you keep on training right through? How important is sort of getting away from that hardcore intensity of training for a race like Kona?
Yeah, I think it's pretty important to have a big off season. I'm a big believer in that. Last year after Chattanooga, I was felt just really burned out, and that race was really hard, and I did basically nothing for like a whole month. But this year I'm feeling pretty good, and I was actually kind of itching to get out and maybe get on the bike here today. But I think normally my rule is that I kind of wait until I really want to exercise again. And then once I'm really anxious to get out and do some workouts, I'll just kind of force myself to wait another few days or a week before I get started again, just to make sure to kind of get rid of any nagging injuries and just make sure the mind's right before you get back into it.
Mm. Matt, what's the biggest life lesson that triathlon has taught you?
I would say just the power of perseverance and consistency. Like I said before, I definitely wasn't expecting to do so well in Kona, but just putting in the work, and there wasn't any one day I can look back on and say, oh, well, because I did that workout, that's why I did so well. It's just, you know, every day you're putting a few pennies in the bank, and it all adds up. So I think that you can apply that to a lot of different things in life.
Yeah, it's all about small gains, isn't it? So like you're talking about the consistency and that sort of thing. It's all about sort of, as you say, just putting a couple of cents in the bank every day, and you can reap big rewards down the line if you are consistent in doing that.
Yeah, certainly. And we can kind of circle back to the bike thing on that. Like the bottle might only save you a minute or something. If you can do that little thing and, you know, you get on your wax chain and that saves you a minute or two, and all these little things add up, and next thing you know, you're coming off the bike 5 minutes sooner. Like it's a pretty big gain. Especially in a big race like Kona, where if you look at the results and look at how much further back you are in 5 minutes, that's probably 10 or 20 places.
What surprised you most about Kona, the race itself and being in that race?
What surprised me most? I would say I think just I knew that it was going to be – there's really high quality of athletes there. But as much as you think about it and prepare yourself for that, it's you don't really know what it's going to be like until you're out there. So it was in the – there's two turnarounds on the bike and two turnarounds on the run. And each one I thought I was kind of – off by myself, and there weren't a whole bunch of people around. And then as soon as I turned around, there's like probably there's just, it seemed like 50 guys just bearing down on me. So that was always pretty crazy to just see how close everyone was, even at the pointy end of the race.
You talk about going in there with the sort of ambition of if you have a good day, getting a top 10, finishing second. I mean, that must be a pretty incredible feeling. I think it going in there with those sort of expectations and far exceeding them. Do you think you had the perfect race, or is there things that you could have done differently, or next time out could go better?
I mean, there's always things that can go better. I would say that I don't think that I'll ever get done with the race and say everything went perfectly. I think this is about as close as I'm going to get. There's probably two things that I would look back on and say, oh, that cost me a few places. One was, this was completely my fault, going up Polani, as you make the turn to go up Polani and out on the Queen K for the bike, which is probably about 20K in. I went to shift down into my small ring, and I dropped my chain, and I had to hop off my bike and put it back on. And I felt like I was just standing there for about 10 minutes. I looked back in my Garmin file, and it was really only about 40 seconds. But that was one thing. And then the second thing is that I took off my kit in T2, and it was like soaking wet. So my T2 was like 4 minutes. So those are probably the biggest things I look back on and say, oh, I could have gone a little faster, basically for free there.
Did you sit 4 minutes in T2? Did you sit down and have a meal? What was the story there?
Yeah, well, the kit with, you know, those aero kits are so tight. And it was just, I'd just been pouring water on myself the whole bike. So it was soaking wet. And it just took forever to get it off. And then I had to put running clothes on after that. So that seemed like it took forever to get on too.
You've been on the Big Island a few times now. You've obviously raced it as well. You had a bit of sort of inside info having been there before, but someone who's possibly listening to this and is aiming at maybe 2018, 2019, whenever, what advice would you give to someone who's possibly heading out to the Big Island for the first time, knowing what you know now?
I would say you really should be prepared for anything, and just get it in your head that it's going to be hot and it's going to be windy. And I think I was prepared for it to be really windy. From what I understand, and this happened this year, there's a headwind most of the way, both ways on the bike. So I think if you're kind of expecting those things when that happens, instead of mentally kind of feeling sorry for yourself, you're prepared for it. And, you know, that's just the way things are. So at no point during the run did I think, oh man, it's so hot out here. This is so hard. I was thinking more like, okay, I'm starting to feel pretty hot. What can I do? What can I do to cool myself down? Okay, I just got to make it to the next aid station, and get as many sponges as I can, as much water, as much ice as I can. And then, okay, I know this part's going to be really hot and it's really exposed. Maybe I'm going to walk through this aid station just to make sure I can get some more cooling down and some more nutrition in. So that'd probably be my advice, is just to mentally prepare yourself for what it's going to be like and how you plan to react when certain situations come up like that.
We mentioned that you've worked it a couple of times before. I've race announced an Ironman, and it's pretty hard work. I've done a few Ironmans myself. What, in your opinion, what's harder, working it or racing it?
I would say for me, working it is harder. So we don't actually have to work the day of the race, but the week leading up, everybody, all our athletes who are racing, will do bike service for them. And it's always really hot out. We're working out in the sun, and it's pretty, they're always stressed out because they think, oh no, my battery died. I'm not going to be able to race. You're like, oh, all right, calm down. We'll get this figured out for you. So I think that there's more stress on you working because, these guys have, you know how much work these guys have put in to be there, and you want to make sure their race goes right. And just standing out in the heat all day, especially at Kona, is, just really taxing. And, but the good part about working it is, you can just go home and have a nice cold beer after, where when you're racing, you got to wait till after the race. So.
But the beers after the race do taste way better than a day after work at the expo.
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially in Kona, they got Kona Brewing Company there. So, and then you always gotta get a lava flow while you're on the island too.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, it's been great catching up. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time. Thanks for your time today on the Kona Edge.
Great. It's good to talk to you. Thanks.
This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by the Wahoo Kicker. Whether you're looking for the accuracy and control of a direct drive bike trainer or the flexibility and convenience of a wheel-on solution, Kicker and Kicker Snap are two distinct indoor training solutions. Kicker Indoor Trainer's large flywheel uses new algorithms to improve responsiveness and better replicate the sensation of riding on the road. So whether free riding or using online platforms like Zwift and TrainerRoad, you'll have the same experience you feel on your favorite outdoor rides. To check out their phenomenal range, head over to thekonaedge.com/indoor. That's thekonaedge.com/indoor. Thank you very much to Matt today. What a cool story. And what a great performance as well, finishing second in this year's Ironman World Championships. Congratulations, Matt. And thank you for sharing your story with us here on the Kona Edge. From myself, Brad Brown, don't forget, if you'd like to reach out and be in touch, you can via social media. Just search for the Kona Edge or look me up personally at Big Brad Brown is where you'll find me across pretty much all the platforms. Or alternatively, what you can do is simply pop me an email. It is brad@thekonaedge.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.
Don't forget, if you'd like to access the commercial-free feed of the Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/support, become a patron, and you'll get access to that feed right away.